training for anything is not easy, but I tell myself I am capable. And I, like, I think of my dad, I think of my sister, I think about, like, the times that they weren't able to have. And I tell myself that I am capable, I can do this, I'm blessed enough to, like, be able to run and move my body, and I can do this. It's not just running, it's not just exercise for me anymore. It's not a matter of, like, staying in shape, looking a certain way. Like, it is way more than that for me. It is, I feel like it's a bond that I have with myself, but also with my dad and my sister. And I don't run alone by my, well, a lot. Like, you will rarely catch me running alone. I'm always running with people. So, like, this bond is something that I have, whether it's, like, whether I'm alone or whether I'm with a group. It's just something that I can internally feel and hold. And it's even though it's not tangible, it feels tangible to me. And that's why I run so much.
I'm Trey.
I'm Quest.
And we're your hosts. Each week, we'll seek out and interview the heroes that live amongst us.
And each week, we'll ask them to tell us the story of an adventure that challenged them, stuck with them, and forced them to grow.
This is our truest adventure.
Like, what made you turn to running?
It's the only thing I knew, like, it was stable. At that point, I had become more regimented, right? I was a senior in college. I was getting ready to graduate. I had my shit together. For someone, you know, at that age, had their shit together. And it was the one thing that I knew that I could do. It wouldn't, like, it wouldn't change, right?
Yeah.
Not running evolves, but you always put one foot in front of another. You always put your shoes on and nothing really changes that much about running. And I knew that that was the one thing that I could keep stable, essentially.
Yeah.
So I just would do it, not at the extent that I'm doing it now. I would sometimes just go and run the loop at Audubon, like a 2 mile loop, just to, like, clear my head.
Yeah. And is that, like, something you continued to rely on as time went forward? As, like, I imagine, like, your sister's condition, does it end up ultimately getting better or?
No. So I would use it to, like, I would spend days at the hospital. Yeah. Like, I'd not want to leave the hospital, but I would leave just to go for a run. And I would feel guilty at the time. I'm like, oh, I should be at the hospital. Like, my sister is sick, but I would leave and I would go for runs. She didn't make it. Treatment didn't work. She passed away 6 months later. She was 20 years old, you know, hadn't even made 21 yet. No, she didn't make it.
So, and you're just
devastated.
Yeah.
Devastated.
Yeah. And with that, so you're, like, pushing yourself. Are you, like, when you're running, I guess, here's the thing is, like, so now we have, like, this. Thank you so much for sharing. I anyone that is listening, Quest might have known some of this, but I had no idea. And so if I pried and, like, pushed it someplace that you didn't, like, okay. So if you listen to a previous episode, and I know you have, you listen to the Denali episode, we ask a question, which is, what is your, what?
Wait, what, that's what, like, is, not.
Quest so, is stopping. Like, you know, so just, like, go. Yeah, because, like, I'm sitting here, like, I want to ask her the question, and you keep, well, every time I go to ask her the question, like, what is her truest, and I'm not going to finish the question.
Right. Well, that's not really so a clipping. Mm-hmm. That's so it. That's, like, what I'm saying is, like, right, with what we kind of started with and what we'll get to, where you've heard just a little bit about the feats that Imani has been able to achieve with just the 2 feet that God gave her. Amazing, period. But then you start to hear some of the context that led her to that, where, like, I frankly, as I sit here, do not know if I would have been a strong enough person. If right fucking now, I am a strong enough person that if I got that sort of call about one of my younger siblings, that I would be, like, that I would have the strength to, like, be out running, let alone get out of my fucking bed, right?
It was hard.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to leave the house. I am thankful because for the fact that I was in school at that point. I was in grad school in Lake Charles. So that was where my education took me after undergrad. And my dad was a rock. And he said, your sister, this is not okay. Like, your sister would not want you to do this. So that between school, my dad, and my friends, you know, they would be like, hey, I remember, like, my good friend Annalise texting me, come out to Happy's, come run, you know, get out the house. So I was forced to leave the house. That wasn't the hardest part of the journey. Mm. You know, my sister passing away was detrimental, but I feel like had I known what the next 6 months were going to be like, I think I don't know if I would have reacted the same way. I thought that the worst was over at that point, and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, instead of asking the question I was going to ask about your truest adventure in running, if you don't mind, like, how does it get worse than your younger sister?
So
dying.
Sorry. I go back to school. Like, I finish the semester out. You know, you tell yourself, push on, move on, do what you got to do to survive, whatever. And I would say February of that year, January, February. And like, good, cool. Like, my sister passed away. I did some good things. Like, I ran the Baton Rouge, what was it called? Rouge Orleans with a bunch of friends. Like, we ran from Baton Rouge to New Orleans. That was really special and emotional for me. That was really soon after she passed away. Probably, I think it was in like December or early in the new year. Like, I remember being on the levee and it was dark and I was like sleep deprived and tired and hungry and like having conversations with her, which sounds crazy, but at 5 a.m. and it's dark, it's not crazy.
Yeah.
I had run rock and roll again. I had PR'd my half, I was like, okay, like the worst has happened. I'm getting in, but you know, you learn to live with what you have to live with. Like, right. You learn to know what normal means is not what it meant like 6 months ago.
Right.
And then in February, my dad got sick, like really sick. And at this point, like as a dietetics major, as someone like going through clinicals, you kind of, and being, I was in a hospital a lot at that point. Like, I was doing my internship in a hospital. So I saw a lot of sick people. And my dad looked really sick. And if you ever saw my dad prior to him getting sick, he was a sturdy guy. He was a horseman. He worked outside 15-hour days, like a strong horseman. And my dad looked ill. And he had pancreatic cancer.
Oh, my God.
And if you know anything about pancreatic cancer, yeah, you know it's
horrible.
It's 5% survival rate. Right. Like, they catch it. They always catch it too late.
Yeah.
And my dad had end stage terminal, had already spread to other organs type of pancreatic cancer. Oh. And I remember getting that call and I was like, how is this okay? That's where my sister's death started to affect me. You know, you think like, it's all good. Like, I'm over it. I've gotten past the worst part. And then you get worse news. My dad was like, not that you have favorite parents. I love my mom. You love your parents equally, but differently. Yeah. And my dad was my parent. He's the one that I related to a lot. I was a lot like him. I am a lot like him, I should say. So my dad tries to get treatment at MD Anderson. He calls me in Houston. Because I remember they drove through Lake Charles. They, you know, tell me we're going to Houston, blah, blah, blah. They call me from Houston. He's like, the doctor's like, they can't do anything. It's too far gone. I basically quit school. I called the director of my program and I said, I'm going to Houston. I'm going to get my dad and I'm going to New Orleans. I cannot go any further.
Yeah.
Like, I just left Lake Charles indefinitely.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you do, right?
Sitting here.
I remember this vividly. I could tell you what I was wearing. I could tell you where I was sitting. I was in the cafeteria of West CalCam Hospital, and I was in the wound rotation. Like, I could tell you it was a Wednesday. Like, it was so vivid in my memory.
Yeah. And so you drop everything.
Like, it's hot.
Yeah, yeah. Like, as would be fully fucking expected.
Yeah. And I come back to New Orleans with my parents. And my dad, I say fortunately and unfortunately, like, passed away pretty quickly. And I say fortunately only because he was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Pancreatic cancer is painful. It like wreaks havoc on your digestive system. So like you're in pain, you can't eat, you can't move. Like my dad was like 130 pounds at that point. I mean, for a 5'9" man, that's not normal.
Right.
And he passes away. So between
how long is that space between your sister passing away and your father passing away?
Not even like barely 6 months.
How are you out of bed right now? Like to go back to like Quest Point and not trying to make light of it, but like I think about, I have a sister and I have a father, and a lot of people have those things. But I can't imagine losing one of them in the course of 6 months. I don't know if I could get out of bed.
Like, I wasn't okay.
Yeah.
Like I was not okay. After my dad passed away, then like the grieving of my sister happened, right?
Yeah.
That's when it all like comes tumbling down. I'm back in New Orleans. I'm not in school to distract me. I remember just like some days I would just be sitting on the floor, like my back to the couch, and I couldn't move. I was just sad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how to answer that question. I don't know how I got out of bed some days. I remember the day after he passed away, I woke up and I was like, am I really going to my father's funeral today? Almost six months to the day of my sister's passing away. Like, how is this happening? So I don't know. For a while, I didn't want to get out of bed. I didn't want to leave the house because I feel like if I left the house, something bad would happen.
Yeah.
It was a fear.
Yeah. It almost seems justifiable at that point. I mean, honestly, it just seems overwhelming.
Yeah.
I'm overwhelmed. Like, I don't even know what question to ask now. I'm like, seriously, it's just like,
Running saved me. I will tell you that running saved me.
Thank you, because that's like throwing me a lifeline right now. Yeah. Like, I literally don't know how to go. So then how does running save you?
Running, I'm thankful for the running community in New Orleans. I'm thankful because some of my best friends aren't people I grew up with or like live down the block from, or they're people that I only know because I started running and running consistently here in New Orleans. Annalise is like one of my greatest friends, and we weren't even that close of friends at that time. She was going through similar losses with her grandmother and having cancer, but so she understood like how I was feeling, and she would get me out of the house. She would like really say, just come and meet me, come and meet us, come to the group. Some days I would only leave to go meet the group for a run and then go right back home.
Is this just like a collective of your friends? Is this a running
group? The running group. Usually I'm right. At that point I was running Happy's Running Club on Wednesdays, or I was meeting the groups on the varsity group on Saturday.
All right.
That was like my more consistent parts of my group.
Yeah. Not unlike you. Like it's just like being completely candid, right?
Yeah.
I completely candid about like the headspace I'm in right now. Like I told you, I'd read the article that the Wild Way wrote about you, and they talked about like your sister passing and your dad passing in short order, and like knew that like you had turned to running. But it's like still like very striking to me, like set aside, like, again, the accomplishments in running, but just like the fact that you're able to go forward and function and have achieved all you've achieved in like regular life, like with your career and going back eventually and finishing school. Like, it, again, like the best like word I have for it is just like awe inspiring, like, which is something that like, So it's like awe-inspiring, because I'm sitting here and like the thing that I'm processing is like a thing that not a ton of people who know me know is like during my third year at Tulane, I got like super sick and like had all these significant stomach issues. And like right now I'm like a skinny dude. I would describe it as athletically toned skinny dude, but I'm a skinny dude. I weigh like 147. Throughout my whole life, I have weighed like max like 136, 137. Like that's been my weight. When I got sick during that semester at Tulane, I dropped to 112 pounds.
Holy cow.
And it was like similar shit where, you know, and it's like ultimately what I have is like Crohn's disease. It's an inflammation in the intestine, whatever. And it like affects your ability to absorb nutrients. So like you lose a lot of weight, affects like your diet and like desire to eat and all that sort of shit. But like it happens like for like a young college dude in like this space of like the prime of my life. Like I'm supposed to be like literally have, pardon the phrase, life by the balls. Like everything's great, right? I'm a college kid in New Orleans. I live with like three of my buddies, and it literally went in the span of like a month or so. Like we had parties all the time. We hung out all the time, and I turned into this fucking recluse because like shit was going so haywire with my stomach. I literally couldn't do more than I propelled myself out of bed to go to class. I would go to class in sweats and or pajama pants and a sweatshirt, sit through the class where I took this like bullshit class about the judiciary, and like the teacher was a stickler about like taking roll, and like she called me in and told me like you've missed too many, like I had like a B in the class from the papers I'm turning in, but she's like you're missing too many classes, I'm gonna have to fail you. So I started going to the class, and it was like these old wooden desk, and like I was so skinny that my tailbone would like be rubbed raw or sore from sitting in the chairs, but like I had to sit there because she's taking fucking roll. And just like knowing like that's how, that's actually, so like I said, me and my sister have always been close. Like we didn't get super close until that happened, because that's who I would turn to. Like I would talk to my sister every fucking day. And so just like all that, that share, so that like one, you're being extremely fucking vulnerable with us, so I don't want you to be in that vulnerable space alone. But also as I like sit here and think about it, like that was like me dealing with my own shit, which I think I have greater capacity to do. But if it was like that sort of thing happening to like my little sister or my little brother, like I like, it's just all that, like that ramble, that tangent, just to be like, you, I'm super fucking impressed by you as a person, period. Before we like now can turn the corner to get to the fucking running.
I just want to say, the story that you and Marquez told about, you know, things that happened to you, like your college stories, and it happened to your sister and your dad, and I'm not even 19 yet, and it shows me, you know, every day I'm like, you know, tomorrow's not guaranteed, but this shows me even more that tomorrow's most definitely not guaranteed. And you say, like, your little brothers, how you're more mature now to, like, handle them being, like, annoying, but it's not really annoying, and I know this, like, I am being, like, an asshole, but right. I, you know, as I get older, I'm mature, but I'm humbled by these stories because I might lose them to, like, you know, I never know what's going to happen, so... That's what I want to
say. Yeah, and like, just like even on that point, like, right, I was just joking about how when I finished that first loop, like, I was like not very, and it's like something that like when I tell you that story about like me passing the loop line and the ladies being like, you having fun, and me being like, no, I feel bad about that because I'm like generally so overwhelmingly a positive person. And the reason for that is that space of fucking life. Because there were days during that, because like now... that like, you know, all these intestinal and stomach issues are like a big fucking deal. And like tons of people have them. And we go down the rabbit hole of like why people think that is and what the research says. But like back then, people didn't, like nobody, they had no fucking idea. Like to the point that I had to like go get a colonoscopy because like that's the one way they can like look up there and like get really intimate with you and try to look at it. The doctor told me, I remember this, to this day, it's still one of the worst fucking experiences of my life because I wasn't fully knocked out. Like, I'm awake enough to feel all the discomfort and the pain. And my grandma had to come down from Alexandria because you have to have somebody go with you. So, like, I remember going through all the prep, like, in the hotel room with my grandma. Like, basically, like, you have to take all this, like, stuff that clears out your system, right? And so, like, I'm sitting there with my fucking grandma on the other side of the door, like, on the crapper, like, 30 times in a fucking night. So like, it was horrible from a fucking start, right? So then I go through the procedure. I'm fuck groggy as shit because this is before they use that Thriller, that Michael Jackson propofol to knock you out. And I'm just like fucking dazed. And this is supposed to be after like 6 months of being poked and prodded. I went to the hospital once a week, had to get blood drawn. They tried every different test, like millions of different things. this was supposed to be the thing, as horrible as it was, as uncomfortable as it was, this was supposed to be the thing where the doctor could say, this is definitely what it is. Here's the medicine regimen for it. And like, this is a path fucking forward, right? While I'm still like doped up, sitting in the office with the doctor and my grandma, he says, we see no signs of it. And starts asking me, are you sure you're not using drugs, heroin, crack cocaine, and we're also going to test you for HIV? My grandmother burst into tears because she's thinking, as like most people who don't live in New Orleans think, is like, New Orleans is this like hotbed of sin. It's modern day fucking Sodom and Gomorrah. And so she's just like, he hasn't been honest with us. He's doing crack and he's got AIDS. Like, so she like burst into tears. He's doing and I'm just like, immediately, like, I can't fully process, but I'm like, I don't fucking have AIDS and I'm not smoking crack, but fuck, she's sitting like, grandma, do you realize like what it's like to be a Southern person? She has an obligation now to report this to all of my aunts and uncles and my mom, right? And I'm just like,
so now your mom thinks you might be doing crack. So
by the time it got to like your mom, you've your heroin, crack.
Yeah. And AIDS. Like, and let's put it this way. By the time I completely come from under the effects of the faux anesthesia, it has circled Louisiana, made its way to Seattle, and is like back down to me. And I'm having to have conversations for the next 3 days with people, reassuring everyone that like, that's not the problem, you know? Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. But like that, again, that tangent to say, it is that space of life, that 6 month period, is why when you meet me, you see me, I don't hold on to really any fucking thing for too long. Like, shit is never that deep. If you are still breathing, then the shit is not a problem. You can find a way around it. That's it. But again, all that to say, like, that's incredible fucking human being, you.
Can I ask the question?
Yeah.
Here it is. The question is, what is your truest adventure in running? Because from an outsider's perspective, I would just say your whole journey in running would qualify as that. Because
if you were the type of person who just like at this point in life ran 2 miles twice a week after all you'd been through, that would be a fucking truest adventure in running. But it's so much realer for you.
Yeah.
So what's your truest adventure in running? Yeah, right? Let me say, Imani's like, you know how much I fucking run? I just told you I do 60 miles a week. You want to put the bar at 4 miles a week? Give me a break.
No, kudos to like 1 mile a week, really.
Oh, yeah. I didn't mean to.
Yeah, kudos to anyone that wants to get out and get moving. That's what, I mean, that's what we're trying to do this season, is highlight a lot of different people with a lot of different backgrounds and just like really kind of hammer home the point that running is a thing that so many different people do from different walks of life, different experiences. I mean, different, straight up, right? Like, if you guys have heard the episode with Anthony Butler, please, like, I mean,
people. It unites people.
Yeah. And it brings so many people together.
Running, because it sees no color, no race, no gender, no political background. You could be from, you know, mansion on in the middle of like the nicest block in New Orleans, or from like the one bedroom in the like what you would consider the worst part of New Orleans, and you would never know. And that's why I love running. My truest running adventure,
truest adventure in running. It's a marketing thing, you gotta say.
Truest
it the right
adventure
way.
In running, I would say, would be, I think a lot of people would expect the win last year, but I don't think so.
Okay, yeah. We got to talk about the win. We don't have to do super deep dive, but what's the win you're talking about? Yeah, what did you win?
So last year, I, after some drama, we can talk about the drama if you want, but I was first place overall female finisher at the Louisiana Marathon.
Holy cow.
With my personal best, which I hold right now.
Which is what?
3:07.58.
Not like you're remembering for 20, every second of it. Okay, so
26.2 miles.
For 26.2 miles.
You're saying there's drama in that. Can we just what in the hell? Do you want to talk about the drama in that or not?
I
don't know what you're talking about,
honestly, from what I've slightly was told that day and then from what I read later, which was I was officially in second place the whole time. Like when I crossed the finish line, mind you, I was elated to be in second place. Yeah. I could have been in last place. I could not care less about what place I was in at that point. I was running like a 5 or 6 minute PR at that point. So wow. I was already having like a really good race.
And then just like to decipher that for like non-runners, not distance runners, like you're beating your personal best marathon time by 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Like by the time you cross.
Yeah. My best personal best marathon time prior to that was 3:13 and some change.
Yeah.
So I was already like minutes ahead of that. I was happy with my time. Like I said, I could have been in last place and I really didn't give a shit about what place I was in at that point. But the first place finisher got disqualified for X, Y, and Z reason. And when I crossed the finish line, I was like, holy shit, second place. This is so cool.
Yeah.
And the race officials were like, hey, we know that you think you're in second place, but you're actually in first place. This is the kicker. Hey, can you go back across the finish line and run back this way so we can take a picture?
That happened?
Yes.
Did you do it?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, Trey, I remember standing there and looking.
I got to ask one question.
Yeah.
So they do, when you run a marathon, they always do photos at the finish and they attach those numbers. They attach the photos to your bib number.
Yeah.
So did you get the two crossings of the finish line? Please tell me.
No, I think like there was only one pic. The only pictures of me crossing were
like the winner ones.
Yeah. This is like a government conspiracy where they went like they straight excise the whole thing is clean. And like we're leaking it now. Like Anthony leaked that McDonald's too hot coffee situation. So wait, so one, it's ridiculous that you just ran 26.2 miles faster than you'd ever run it in your life and faster than most humans could do. Like, I don't even know a good analogy for that. Like people aren't just running 3:07:58, 26.2 miles, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like, hey, can you do a little bit more running so we can get this shot right?
Y'all, I remember being like, you know, 50 meters from the finisher. This is after the fact.
Yeah.
And I'm standing there and I'm like, literally bracing myself, like my brain is telling my legs, like, you have to move again.
Yeah.
And I'm at that point standing there unsure if I can go and run again.
Oh my God.
Because I didn't, when you finish a race, you know, you're done.
You're done.
I was EMS for rock and roll this year. And I can verify that by the number of people that I had to like carry from the finish line to the medical tent 50 feet away.
You're done.
Run another 50 feet. Yeah. Well, because people just,
and this goes to,
you're mentally shut.
That's
you're
what
just
I'm
shut
saying.
Down.
This goes to what I tell people all the time, which I know you've had conversations with people about. Running those sort of distances is mental.
Yes.
Physically, you can do it, but your mind will stop you before your legs will ever physically fall out, which is like Trey's nodding yes, which is like, of course, like you do those sort of distances that you did without training or like run that marathon as fast as you did. Your mind is telling you just one more mile.
So all of your 100 listeners this time.
Ooh, yeah.
Nice,
I will tell you that it is all mental.
Yeah.
Your body will do whatever you put you tell it to do.
Yeah.
Now, granted, are you going to run like a 3-hour marathon the first time? Can you tell your body to do that? If you can, please tell me how you did that.
Yeah.
But I don't think so. But you can physically run a marathon. People who say, I can't run, I don't know how I'll ever do it.
Yeah.
Remember, I started running 10 laps in non-running shoes 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm running the Boston Marathon this time, like this year, for what would have been the third time had I not got hurt last year.
Yeah.
And
it's like amazing because it's like everybody has those stories. Like I started running in Puerto Rico at 25, 26, and I would do a mile, half a mile out and half a mile back down Paseo Princesa, and I would struggle.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh my God, maybe I can walk the last quarter. And like, I just ran a 50 mile race like a week and a half ago.
Ridiculous. I tell myself all the time. I have a motto is I am capable.
Yeah.
And when shit gets hard, running is not easy. Training for a marathon is not easy. Training for anything is not easy. But I tell myself I am capable. And I think of my dad. I think of my sister. I think about like the times that they weren't able to have. And I tell myself that I am capable. I can do this. I'm blessed enough to like be able to run and move my body. And I can do this. It's not just running. It's not just exercise for me anymore. It's not a matter of like staying in shape, looking a certain way. Like it is way more than that for me. It is, I feel like it's a bond that I have with myself, but also with my dad and my sister. And I don't run alone by my, well, a lot. Like you will rarely catch me running alone. I'm always running with people. So like this bond is something that I have, whether it's like, whether I'm alone or whether with I'm with the group. It's just something that I can internally feel and hold. And it's even though it's not tangible, it feels tangible to me. And that's why I run so much. You know, I do enjoy it, like for so many reasons. It's so like deep for me. That's it's so deep.
Okay. So now ask the question.
I'll ask it.
That's so, oh.
What is your truest adventure if it's so not amazing. All of this other stuff?
So, you know, so when I started, no coincidence, I started running marathons after my dad passed away. You know, after my sister and my dad passed away, it's when I picked up marathoning for like the first marathon I ran was in 2014. So that was not even a year after my dad passed away had I run my first marathon.
And Kim, like you didn't even start running marathons until 2014. Yes. And by
January
like
2014, yeah, that was my
2016 first place female finisher in like a legit Boston qualifier marathon, right?
Yeah. I remember that first, that day I woke up, it was May. I was still in New Orleans. I was still not back in school, but I was like out of the hole, as I called it. Like mm-hmm. I was out of that deep, dark hole that I was like slowly climbing myself into. And it was like the end of May, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I remember waking up and I was like, I'm going to run a marathon this year. I'm going to run a marathon this year. Like that's happening.
Yeah.
And I signed up for the, and I checked Facebook. Happy's was having a promo code for the Louisiana Marathon. I was like, that's it. Like it's in the cards for me. I got to sign up today.
Yeah.
So my, to answer your question, my second marathon that I ran, which was Big Sur, beautiful. Like if you've never been to Big Sur, the coast of California.
I hear this is like one of the most beautiful marathons like in the whole world.
It's unreal. It's, like you're like, how does this exist? How does beauty in like this kind of natural beauty exist? Until like you have to see it yourself. It's hard. That course is harder than Boston. And people know how hard the Boston Marathon course is. If you've ever like run it or heard of it, you know, you hear Heartbreak Hill. Heartbreak Hill is nothing on Hurricane Hill, which is a 2 mile climb on Big Sur's course.
Pass.
That year, a group of us from New Orleans, all friends, like some of my really good friends, we all went and ran the marathon together. That's what friends do, right? They run marathons and take vacations.
Yeah.
That year, I raised over $5,000 for the American Institute for Cancer Research.
Wow.
In my dad and my sister's name. That's all I wanted. All I wanted was to find a way to find good in what happened, to find like a silver lining. There has to be a silver. There has to be more than just like my dad and my sister dying. I can't let that be the end of it. So that year I raised over $5,000 to donate to this society, or to this research foundation. And I, to be able to run in their name, to be able to like accomplish that 26.2 miles in their name and their honor, and to like know that I had the support of the people who donated money and donated their time to me. Like I couldn't have asked for more. So that's how I would answer that question. Like to be able to run that race in their name and in their honor, and in one of the most beautiful places I've ever been and ever seen and think we'll ever see. And I know that they were on that course with me, and they were with me running step by step for every mile of that course.
That's it.
Shut it off. That's it. Shut it off. I don't think there's anything else we, man. That's, yeah. I.
Fuck that. Close it out, man.
Now yes. I understand. I straight up, like, when he says he has been fanboying out on you, A-Money, I had no idea. I didn't do my homework. I didn't obviously Google your name. didn't Instagram find you. I didn't do any of the things that I possibly could have in the time that we scheduled the interview to now. And even since before then, Marquest has been just talking about A-Money. And I've been like, yeah, cool, phenomenal, cool.
Fucking human.
Yeah, and he's, yeah, she won Louisiana last year. Oh, okay, good. Good for her. Like, I'm not trying to discredit that at all. Like, I thought that was, like, super remarkable. But I can understand why it's just like, yeah, I would like to be this second member, but I'm sure your whole family's already in the fan club. So if you have fan club cards and you want to send me mine, I'm hoping that it's not too far after Marquest's number, but, like,
you guys are too much.
You're too much. Like, honestly,
I
mean, come on. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Thank you.
No.
Shukran.
Come on.
Damn it.
Honestly, I cannot thank you enough for coming out tonight and telling us all of that. And you're right.
Phenomenal human being.
You're right. And
that is this space of an hour and a fucking half. It exemplifies like everything that is like why this podcast is like worth the energy and the time.
Yeah.
Like, cause now that we're like in sync with to go back to gym, what the fuck we're driving at. Mm-hmm. Like, the fact that we get to share this space with you and like you're sharing that story with us and sharing that bit of vulnerability with us and like with our 100 listeners, right? I mean, we're all better off as fucking humans getting to know that people like A-Money exist in the world.
I mean, I'm super thankful for y'all. I'm like, I've said it 100 times before. If it weren't for running, I wouldn't know anyone in this room. If it weren't for running, I wouldn't have never met Mark, who then introduced me to Denali, who then introduced me to you, who then we're going to pretend like you don't, like last, you know.
Yeah, can we wipe that, please?
Yeah, we'll just erase that. Like, then I would have never met you guys and I would have never met y'all. Like, the chain of events that had to happen, the unfortunate things that had to happen in my life led to these great things happening and me meeting these great people and like, I think about what life was like before my sister and my dad passed away. And it was life. It was cool. Like, yeah, I didn't have these like great tragedies. I didn't have like, you know, this sad, unfortunate backstory. But I think about how good the people in my life are and how like how differently I can see life and the world and like in such a good way and in such a positive way that I'm thankful for the unfortunate parts of my life, as you know, as weird as that sounds, I'm not, you know, I would never wish what happened to my family, to me, my family, to anyone, even my like even the worst person on earth should never feel what we felt. But I am grateful that this is what has come out of it.
Yeah,
I you know, wow, you're right, man. We should just take it home. My name is Trey.
Like, how do you even follow that?
Yeah.
Markel.
And I'm Quest. Thank you for listening to The Truest Adventure.
Gotta be the truest. Must be the truest.
Yo, we got a sponsor.
We don't have a sponsor. You're joking. Are you serious?
I'm dead serious, man.
Who's the sponsor?
It's a company here in South Louisiana called Varsity Sports. It's a running company that also, besides providing running gear, they also do great stuff in the community.
You don't need to tell me about Varsity Sports. I've been going to Varsity since I moved back to New Orleans like 2 years ago. Linda at the shop on Magazine Street in New Orleans helped me pick my shoes for the half marathon, the marathon this year, and the ultra marathon, the 50 miler.
That's awesome. That's super cool.